I try to leverage my experience to create value for clients. I'm all about how can we collaborate versus compete with one another, how we can be successful, you know, what we can do to get to that next level.
Have you ever wanted to get involved in real estate development but didn't know where to begin? Do you think real estate development is only for the large hedge funds or major corporations, you know, the big guys? Or have you done some development in the past and are looking to scale up? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then this podcast is for you. Welcome to the Wired Wealth and Real Estate Development Podcast. I am your host, Nick Smith. Get ready to have your mind blown and rewired as we discuss all aspects of creating wealth and real estate development. Good day, everyone. This is Nick Smith, again, your host with the Wealth and Real Estate Development Podcast, better known as Wired. Definitely want to welcome you to another episode. Want to thank you again to all my listeners, subscribers, those that downloaded episodes in the past or that will download episodes. I definitely appreciate it. We actually reached another mark recently this week. We're up to about 250 downloads. So, hey, I'm celebrating even a small win. So I'm thank you all for, again, your support. Encourage you all to share any episodes, like any episodes, comment, whether you're on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, I'm on Spotify, Apple, pretty much everywhere that you can listen to podcasts. So definitely want to thank you all again. Today, we got a great episode. We are talking about money. We're talking about money. I actually have Michael Mann here. He is the money man. He is a commercial loan broker, and he and I have known each other now for several years. He helped me actually get through my first flip, and that was back in 2016, 2017. So, Mike, how you doing, sir?
I'm well. I'm glad to be here.
Definitely. Appreciate you coming on, man. Please give my audience a brief introduction of yourself, who you are, what's your background, and what you're currently doing.
Yes. Well, like Nick said, I am the money man, right? So my name is Michael Mann. My goal and what I like to do is work with investors to help them out. I believe behind every successful entrepreneur, there is a money man, right? And so since about 2014, that's when I got started. I've been in lending, financial services, from small businesses where I would say majority of my business is from real estate investors. Spent time as a business development director for a private lender. Through that experience, just learned the industry, made relationships, made contacts, and even spoke at a few seminars and partnered with a couple of different organizations to teach, you know, how to leverage capital for their investments. But that's essentially it. I try to leverage my experience to create value for clients. I'm all about how can we collaborate versus compete with one another, how we can be successful, you know, what we can do to get to that next level. Currently, what I'm doing is pretty much what I've always been doing is just providing investors with funds. Whether you're a small business looking to get started or you're a seasoned professional, whether you want to buy a home to live in or a home to invest in, if there's a loan program out there, I can write it. And so that's essentially, you know, what I do. I believe financing is easy. So I try to make it simple for investors, take all the guesswork out of it. And that's about it.
Nice, man. Nice. I know we've talked before. And of course, you know, like I said, we've known each other several years. Working with individuals that are fixing flippers is a big portion of your business. You have a lot of experience with that. And, you know, even though we do discuss real estate development as from a ground up new construction perspective on the podcast, fixing flipping is still development. It's just redevelopment. You're not building something from the ground up. You're just taking something that's existing and making it better. You know, you're improving the product. You know, when I was focusing more so on residential real estate, I had a lot, or I got a lot of calls from first time investors. You know, people that really didn't have any type of fix and flip experience, you know, they've just been kind of poking around Bigger Pockets or other online platforms, and they've gotten bit with the bug. You know, they want to go out and do a fix and flip, you know, something like that. For somebody that is in that situation, what is the best thing they could do to start getting ready for financing, and what type of products or, you know, platforms do you have at your disposal to help your first time fixing flippers? Because your first one is always the hardest one. First one is the hardest one.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of a loaded question. So I can go in so many different directions with just an answering your question. Mm-hmm. But I'm a frame it like this. If I was new to real estate, right, and I wanted to invest in a property, fix it up, and then sell it, right? Let's say, using me for example, 18 years old, I saw Carlton Sheets on an infomercial, and it's like ever since then I was bit by the real estate investing bug. So just trying to figure my way through that, right? If you're in a car, you drive, and you hear like, "Hey, flip this house," or you watch HGTV and you want to do that, the first step I think is to buy a house to live in, right? You have to be in the game to play the game. And one of the easiest and surefire ways on how to invest in real estate is to buy your primary residence. The reason I tell people to start there is that you're not going to find a loan program with a lower entry point than a house to live in, right? Now, you can do the same due diligence you would on an investment property. You can, there's different programs out there to teach you to look at things, to strategize different ways. You know, you start with the end in mind, location, 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 right? You know, find a good quality property at a discount. What they say, find the ugliest house on the best block, right? And start there. The reason I suggest starting there is that once you start fixing and flipping, you will realize very quickly that you're going to need some capital. Right. There's always a need for capital in investing in real estate. And no matter how great of an investor you are, no matter how much education that you have, there's always going to be something that's going to come along that might, you might have to adjust. You might have to adjust your plan, might have to be nimble. And in real estate, unfortunately, and you might know from experience, making adjustments and being nimble can cost a little bit of money. Right. And so as a first time flipper, I will start there. Now, if you already own your primary residence, great, right? You want to leverage that and pull some capital out. So if you own your residence, you have about $50,000 in liquid funds, and you want to now start fixing and flipping, I think the best way to finance a deal is to have a good quality deal, right? I don't know if a lot of people say this, but the financing is easy when the deal makes sense, right? Therein lies the rub, because what makes sense to a new investor may not make sense to a seasoned investor, right? There's some nuance to it. And so the second step I would suggest is that if you have the funds and the means to invest in real estate, now you need the education, right? You need to know what you're looking at, or at least leverage and work with people that understand what you're trying to accomplish. A realtor that's also an investor. You know, listen to this podcast and connect with other investors that actually know the nuance of investing. And the reason I suggest there is because just because it seems like a good deal may not make it a good deal, right? Just because the price might be low may not make it a good deal.
So let me stop you there, because yeah. I want to get your knowledge, your professional opinion, not even opinion. I want to get your professional take. What is, from a lending perspective, what is a good deal? You know, on a basic flip. We're just talking about a flip. We're not talking about rental properties or anything like that. What is a deal from a lending perspective that, okay, this kind of makes sense, and this is something I think we can work with?
Yeah, so it's really about the math. It just really comes down to the math. And therein lies the rub, in my opinion, because you can look at two sets of numbers that come up with two totally different opinions. Mm-hmm. That's why they call it broker's price opinion is a opinion, right, versus a broker's price fact, right, which is the actual fact, right?
An appraisal is still an opinion.
Appraisal is still an opinion. And so what makes a good deal is the numbers. Like, you're getting a quality property. So that doesn't necessarily mean you're getting a cheap property, right? You're not buying a house that's 10-15,000 and you got to put 200,000 in the area because you saw a house 3 miles away sell for $300,000, and you feel like that's what you want to target, right? So you want to kind of take that speculative viewpoint out of the equation. You just want to look at what's selling, what the area is doing, and then get your numbers right. Right. And so, for example, it's kind of hard to give you a good loan without actually giving you numbers to look off of. Right. And so depending on the financing, so hard money lenders, private lenders, they may have certain loan minimums. Right. And depending on how much cash you have, you may not have enough to buy a really large property. Right. So you have to find one that makes sense. I say you want to get a quality property at a discount. So how do you do that? It's not necessarily finding properties on an MLS. It's finding the ugliest house on the best block. That may require you to knock on some doors. That may require you to get some pocket listings, right? But you want to find a quality property at a discount. You want to find a property that needs some renovations, but not major renovations, right? Maybe some cosmetic rehabs. Something is, you know, grandma's house that took care of the house immaculately, but it's just from 1965. And people want modern houses. If you can find something like that in neighborhoods that are, I believe, and well, this, so let me, before I say this, this is my opinion, right? You want to find quality houses in neighborhoods that are transitioning or borderline, where you can see some growth happening, right? They say location, location, location. When I was focused on investing, how did I do that? I would pick up the newspaper. I will look at average salaries or income for the area. I will look at the school district ratings to get an idea like, man, this area is doing pretty good. I will walk these neighborhoods. And we all have an idea what's the good neighborhood, what's the bad neighborhood. It's like, I don't want to live over here. I want to live over here. Or I want to live with my friends. They got new buildings coming in. They got businesses. They got a lot of people want to be here. Those are types of areas you want to try to find. And you want to try to find them before everybody else find them.
Right.
Why? Because you can ride that appreciation. You can find a house that does need a lot of work, put a little bit of money into it for a bigger reward. Right. So that's an ideal deal if you can find it. But let's be real. In this marketplace, sometimes it's very hard to find those types of scenarios. But it really just comes down to the math. It comes down to the numbers. And you have to have your numbers rock solid. And so a lot of times I see investors where they are looking at areas where they're overvaluing property. I think this house is going to sell for 250 when in reality it may only sell for 200,000, right? Or they underestimate how much it actually costs to renovate a property, right? Like they over improve the property for the area or where they're trying to sell. So these are all nuances that if you're working with a seasoned investor or you're learning from the right people, you can kind of navigate that before that problem presents itself. Does that make sense? So it's kind of hard, in my opinion, to give you a straight, this is a good deal, this is a bad deal, because there's some nuance to it, right? But once you learn the nuance, you should be able to identify a great deal right away, right? And for me, it's just all about the math. You want to get a quality house at a discount, and you don't want to put a lot of cost into it to renovate, right? You want to keep the renovation costs low, and you want to have a nice return on the back end, right? So does that make sense?
No, it makes 100%, 100% sense, for sure, for sure. You touched on two things in your response. You mentioned hard money and private money. Explain what the difference is between hard money and private money.
Yeah, so this is my definition, or the difference between hard money and private money. Hard money is just a private money lender that realized they can charge more.
That's a good right? explanation. So, that's a good explanation.
That's just pretty much. So there's a distinction that I think we need to make between walking into, let's say, Chase Bank and getting a loan to buy real estate versus going to a company that specializes in funding for fix and flip properties, or what I call a short-term bridge, mm-hmm. or what's really popular now, DSCR, which is debt service coverage ratio loans, basically loans made off the profitability of the project, right? So there's a distinction between who writes those types of loans. Now, in the world of hard money, depending on how long you've been in the industry, the term private lending has came up quite often. When I was a business development director for a private lender, which is basically a hard money company. That's how they introduced themselves. We are a non-bank lending institution, a private lender, but they were still a company. They still had rules and guidelines in which they followed, right? A non-bank lending institution can also be your neighbor or a member, and what they call themselves, a business. They can be a member of the country club who may have, you know, 400,000 in the IRA burning a hole in their pocket and they're not getting a proper return. And so in the world of real estate investing, a lot of places try to separate those two, right? But what, when it comes to marketing, it's all kind of jumbled together, right? So you'll hear people say, I'm a private lender. And when you reach out to them, it's the same terms you got from hard money, right? Because they all the same. When you should be making a distinction, are you a private person lending funding, right? Or are you a company, right? And generally, companies, they're going to want points. They're going to want origination. They're going to want some type of due diligence done. Because if they didn't, they wouldn't be a company for that much longer, right?
Right. Right.
So that's just the simple main, I think, difference between private and hard money. It's the same, you know, just where it's coming from. Does that make sense?
No, 100%. No, and that's a very, I've never heard anybody explain it that way. So that is, but it's 100% true, because hard money lenders most of the time are getting their funds from private individuals. or companies or institutions or something. So there's still rules attached to the funding that they're getting. And that is one of the reasons why hard money lenders, again, it's not the cheapest option. You know, it's not the, you know, it's not the, you know, 3% interest rate, 4%, 5% interest rate that you could potentially get, you know, on your long-term financing.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because oftentimes we find in real estate, because there's so many different options and people with so many different messages, right? So for example, you can walk into Chase Bank, and I hate to pick on Chase, it's just top of mind bank. You can walk in and Chase and say, I want to get an investment property. Well, you know, Chase have investment mortgages. So that's different than going to a private lender that can do a commercial loan, but it's considered residential real estate, right? And so they can provide a loan to your LLC or your S Corp or your, you know, C Corp, right? And don't require the documentation that a loan that's being packaged to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or a conventional investor loan would be, right? So there's a distinction. And if you're not working with a source that understands that distinction and can communicate that to you, it can come confusing. And then for the average investor that bought a house before, has a really good relationship with the banker, you know, they may present a deal to them as like, I want to get this deal, but they may not have the specific products that's going to fit for them. So then they go out and they start looking at hard money, and hard money is like, well, we're going to need points. The interest rate is going to be, you know, interest only. You're going to pay 10%. And someone looks at it and be like, oh, that's outrageous. My banker is charging me 5% down.
Right.
Well, you know, apples to apples, oranges to oranges, right? You wouldn't go to medical school to be a lawyer, right? So you wouldn't go to law school to be a doctor, right? So there are certain products that are made specifically for the task at hand. And no matter how hard we try, generally the best option is going to be that product that was made for that particular scenario. Now, there are some cases where you can put a square peg in a round hole if the round hole is big enough, but there might be a square hole that is meant for that peg, right? And so my job as a commercial loan broker is to find a program that best fit your scenario, right? And I have options to have different pegs to fit different holes, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I'm glad you mentioned that, because I get a lot of questions, especially for like newer investors who may not be familiar at close a transaction here that may have a really good relationship with their banker or their credit union. It's like, oh, well, I got this investment property and I rented this out and I got 6 mortgages already. And it's like, okay, well, great. That's awesome. I mean, this product was made for investors like you, but it may not look like the 6 or 7% interest you're getting from your bank, but it will provide you a lot more value in the long run. Does that make sense?
Right. No, 100%, 100%. With hard money, because hard money is based off of, you know, the hard asset, you know, one term that is used a lot is ARV, which is your after repair value. You know, back when the market was just going up and up and up, you know, the phrase rising tide lifts all ships, you know, could really apply, because it was almost like you could buy a property, pay too much for it, and then put the rehab into it. But the market almost just kind of recaptured because it was just going up. I mean, look at that period from like 2020 to 2022, when, I mean, we were in just a hyperinflated, crazy market. That's what we were. But the market has changed now. You know, the market has slowed down. I was reading something in our recent, the gentleman that's over our governmental affairs for our local association of realtors here, he's saying the pace of sales has really, really dramatically decreased right now, and various reasons. I mean, interest rates, all of that. So, but you still have to get to some type of after repair value in order to qualify for some of these loans. During a period like this, where we still are kind of, you know, somewhat teeter-tottering in any market where it's not quote-unquote stable, so to speak, what is the best way to come up with a good after-repair value? Again, nobody knows. None of us have a crystal ball. We don't know what the world is going to look like in 6 months to a year. You know, but how, as an informed investor, should we be looking at the market when there is kind of some instability in the market?
Great question. So I'm glad you mentioned this question. And one thing that when I first got started in real estate, I was working with an investor. Like, I started and I didn't have any money. Like, a lot of people didn't have any money, and was trying to figure out how to get started. You know, I went to all different training programs. I went to all different meetups. The meetups to say, hey, learn, but then they want you to pay $20,000 to $30,000 for the program, right? So I've done all that, right? I worked with an investor who will put up the funds. So that gave me some power to go out and actually get deals on the contract, knowing that we had the funds to close. And one of the things I had to learn pretty quickly was just how to identify and find a good deal. And for me, what it boils down to, and it's very simple, a property is only worth what someone is willing to pay for. Point blank, period, right? Now, this is where the speculative component comes in it, right? Because sometimes you can look at properties or recent sales in the area and think, I think this area might be increasing, right? And so sometimes you watch these shows and like Flip This House, and you have a contractor and a realtor, and it's like, hey, I think I can list this house for $220,000. Mm-hmm. Well, we only see comps selling for $190,000. Well, I think my house is in better condition than all those, and I believe I can sell it for $220,000. And then it sits for 200 days, right? Or they might sell it. And so getting good at that nuance, I think, will help you, right? And then being able to pay attention to like market conditions, recognizing trends, right? So you can look at home sales and say, okay, well, the area is just trending, right? But you have to actively look at home sales, right? This is why I think as an investor, you should get familiar with the free tools that are available to you. You should be able to drive through the areas, have a farm area that you know like the back of your hand, and just really understand why properties are selling, what they're selling for, and why people want to be in that particular area. So all those will help you identify and target price points for your properties. So I like to use sites like Redfin, right? Because you can play with the filters and pull up sold properties within like so many days, within a certain mile, like a zip code. You can kind of zoom in and see what sells. But ultimately, at the end of the day, a property is only worth what someone's willing to pay for it. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, as an investor, you got to say, okay, look, we're at the end of a hyperinflated marketplace. Properties are sitting on the market for a little bit more time. So do I want to come in at the highest price point that's out there, or do I want to come in at a lower price point? How quickly do I want to sell my property? How long has it taken for property to sell at that price point? how many days is at the property sat on the market. This is all information that's available to you if you do a little bit of digging, right? And so you look at that. And then when you go out and you buy property, you keep that in mind, right? Because you got to operate with the end in mind. And the best way to get the best price or to make the most money for a flip is to buy it right. Right now, that may not be attractive, or it may not look the, you might have to buy it at a price that you know you won't be able to get the house for, but it just comes back down to the numbers. And so I think I might have deviated from the question, but to answer, like, how do you identify and determine what the value is? It's just what people are willing to pay for properties, right? And you just look at what have sold. And then from there, you say, is the area trending or is it pulling back? And I think just from paying attention to the news and just looking to what people around you are chattering about, you can figure out, like, man, I think the area is trending up, or I think the area is coming down. Like, for example, all in the news, we're talking about home sales have been decreasing, right? So if you see property selling for 200, 300,000, and the news is telling you that properties are decreasing, if you're trying to list a property or you're trying to buy a property, for example, do you want to buy and make sure you have like a 10% cushion in there? Like, if the property's selling for 300 and that's my target, I want to base my numbers off of 270, right? So that may mean instead of offering, 200 for a property, you got to offer, 170 for a property, right? So the only way to learn that is to do it. Right. You have to look at these free sources. You have to drive through these neighborhoods. You have to look at these particular homes that's selling and figure out why, in my opinion. Does
No, man,
that
that
make sense?
is no, super, super. No, that's very helpful. And definitely some nuggets that you just dropped right there. Definitely some nuggets for sure. Because it is we're at the tail end of a hyper inflated market. That's just kind of, let's just be for real. Prices were not going to stay where they were forever. It was going to have to make some type of adjustment. But even in quote unquote bad real estate markets, real estate is still moving. Properties are
Absolutely.
still selling. May not be selling at the price that they once were, but they still are moving, and you got to be able to adjust. A lot of right now, I'm seeing a lot of sellers are still a little bit naive. A lot of sellers still
Absolutely.
think, they still think that the market is where it was a year to a year and a half ago, and it's changed. So as a consumer,
Absolutely.
you gotta have a little patience too. Because after something sits for a little while. Sellers that once weren't willing to negotiate, they become a whole lot more friendly, after something is set for
Absolutely.
200 days on the market.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have to. I give an example. You ever been shopping with like your grandma or like your grandfather, right? And they go shop. They have a routine, right? Every morning they go walk the mall. They sit down and read the paper. They go to the store every single day. And so when they go shopping, they know what's on sale. Oh, that's a good price. They're
Right.
like, oh, that's not a good price. There's no way I'm paying this for that, right? The only way they know that is because they're looking at it every single day. It's like, how do you know what's good or what's not good? We all have these tools and we all use them on a day in and day out basis. We may not just be applying it specific to real estate. Like, we can, like, for example, I like shoes. I like sneakers. I've always been a sneakerhead ever since I was a kid, right? Well, I take that back. I enjoyed sneakers when I was a kid. I couldn't afford them. Right. When I got to college and I started working and making my own money, then I could start buying things that I wanted with my own money. Right. But we know what makes a good deal. We know what doesn't. Like, if you see a pair of shoes and it's $300, like, ain't no way I'm spending $300 for something I can get 400. Right.
Right.
We all know that. Sometimes we don't apply that basic thinking to real estate or even the stock market, for example. You
Right.
can look at a stock chart and be like, well, you know what? Yeah, these prices are coming down. I'm not buying it here. I'm gonna buy it here, right? Or you can look at it as like, man, these things are trending. Let me watch it. And if it comes to this price, I'm gonna pull the trigger and just ride it up, right? You only get that knowledge by looking at it on a continual basis, right? And I believe you cannot invest in real estate without actually being in real estate, right? You gotta go to your neighborhood. You gotta talk real estate. You gotta look at it. You gotta open. Well, I mean, people don't really open up the paper these days, but you can go to these different websites and just look at what's selling. Put some alerts on your phone, right? Work with a realtor and say, I'm looking at areas. If something pops up in this price, send me an alert, right? Start getting familiar with these things, and then that'll help you determine what the prices are because it's right there in front of you.
Right. Comes down to being an informed consumer what you're doing.
Absolutely.
You got to be informed. I, again, used to talk to a lot of first time realtors, not realtors, but first time investors who wanted to do fix and flips, or even buy and holds for that matter. And they're looking for the realtor to do everything, and that just is not a sustainable way of being a true investor. For one, you're putting all of your faith in another person. And you should never do that in any type of investing, period. You have to know and understand the markets that you're in. I don't care if it's in state, out of state, wherever it is. You can never put all of your trust in any one person, because I've heard of horror stories where it's happened to multiple people. Deal with this realtor, deal with this contractor, deal with this other professional, and it goes sideways. You have to be involved. We say passive investing in real estate, but if you're doing fix and flipping, if you're buying whole rental properties, if you're developing real estate, it ain't nothing passive about it. You got to be involved.
Yeah,
You got to be involved for
absolutely.
sure. And kind of shifting gears toward that, I mentioned new construction, and we talked about this a little bit offline. What are some of the challenges that you see when you see kind of a fix and flipper that has done a couple successful fix and flip projects, may not have become rich or wealthy, so to speak, off of these fix and flips, but they have a inkling or a desire to go into new construction. What have been some of the challenges in getting those type of people financed to do new construction projects?
Great question. I think what we kind of, I guess a theme of what we talked about is being is about being an informed investor, right? Informed is just information is experience. When you read it over and over again, you gain some knowledge and experience from that. And the biggest challenge that I see with new construction is that experience, right? The experience you need to buy real estate, fix it up, improve it, and then sell it. It's totally different from building a house on a specific lot, right? Or if you're buying land and you need to develop it, right? Because both of those scenarios are considered ground up construction, depending on what lender is providing the funds, right? But those are two distinct pathways to getting the project done, right? So for example, if you're buying a house to live in, right? And let's say you drive to the neighborhood and you see a subdivision and they got a couple empty lots. You want to buy a home there, right? That's different than you actually buying the subdivision, creating the lots, creating the partials, putting in the roads and the utilities, and then selling the houses on top of those that have to be built, right? Both of those could be considered ground up construction or new construction, right? But one is far more challenging and is going to require a little bit more experience and capital than the other. That makes sense. And so experience is the number one path. The one I would say the number one issue that I have with newer investors or fix and flippers trying to transition into ground up construction, right? They don't understand the nuance between the two different pathways and what they're actually asking for. Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah. So most lenders, if you want to get a land and do subdivisions and build a home on top of that. So let's say you buy an acre of land, you want to divide it in two lots and build a house on there, right? Most lenders are going to require you to have some type of experience with that. And you got to have some capital. The reason, because it can take some time to get a permit just to start building,
Right.
right? And it takes some time to get utilities ran, to get sewers and streets pulled, to get inspectors out. And so, are you going to have the capital to go through that process before the lender can give you the money to start building? Right? Is that going to be something? And do you have experience if there's an issue that comes up there? How do you deal with that? Right? Because these are all things that you're going to have some time. So I grew up in the south suburbs of Illinois, right? At Calumet City, to be specifically. And there's an area in Calumet City called Country Club. Well, it's not in Calumet City, but it's in the south suburbs, Country Club Hills.
Oh, yeah.
And if you ever been on like 57 going south, and your audience may not be familiar with it, but those that are, you're going to see a land. They had a sign that says Outlet Mall is coming soon. That Outlet Mall sign has been there for almost 20 years, right? And so, and I say that as an example is that you can buy land and you can have all the intentions on building on top of it, but for whatever reason, there are going to be some things that come along that's like, it's going to derail this project. This doesn't happen. I'm going to have to adjust. And if you don't have experience, lenders are kind of shy away in regards to that. Does that make
Gotcha.
sense?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
How can somebody, I won't say work around that experience hurdle, but how can somebody mitigate that hurdle from a lending perspective?
Well, I mean, great question. So we talk about experience. The thing in real estate, that experience doesn't have to be from you, right? So you can create partnerships with people that are in spaces that you want to be in, right? So if you want to do new construction, I would encourage you to reach out to the people that are doing ground up construction and new construction projects. Create some partnerships and some leverage so that you can borrow their experience for your own, right? But more so, I think you always need a mentor, right? And then if you specifically want to get into new construction or, well, ground up construction, you should have some relationships with some mentors and go to areas where investors kind of congregate and find people that's in the space you want to be and see if you can build a connection, right? And then you can leverage their experience to complete the project that you're looking at. Now, you don't have to do it for a long time, but until you got the experience where lenders are comfortable with lending to you on your own, then that's where you need to be. And no matter where you're at, just about any industry that you're dealing with, that's pretty much going to be the process, right? So whether you fix and flipping, they always tell you to connect with other investors. Whether you're a realtor, you're starting out, get you a mentor. But I think that's a good place to at least get started, right? Find some people in the space you want to occupy and leverage their experience to your benefit.
Right. When we hear the word leverage, a lot of times we automatically think financial leverage. You know, we think about money, you know, because be for real, if you're getting a loan or any type of investor provided capital to do any type of deal, that's a form of leverage. That's a form of financial leverage. But leverage from a financial perspective is not the only way that you can leverage. Leverage other people's relationships, other people's experience, you know. There's a lot of stuff I'm not experienced in, but if I get connected with the people that do have that experience, yeah, I'm gonna have to give up some of the deal. You know, I'm gonna have to give up, you know, some equity in the property, some interest, depending on how the deal is structured. But think about it this way: if you didn't have that person or didn't have that individual or company or whoever that has the experience, you couldn't do the deal anyway. So,
Absolutely, absolutely.
a piece of a good deal is better than no deal.
Yeah, we have 50% of something or 100% of nothing.
Exactly. But a lot of people get
Absolutely.
caught up on that 100% of nothing because they can't see giving away 50%. But if your deal cannot sustain you giving away 50%, it wasn't a deal anyway. It just
Absolutely,
makes sense.
absolutely, absolutely. Well, I look at it like this, like, and the reason why I came up with Your Money Man, or I started, you know, branding, because my last name is Man, but my motto is behind every successful investor or entrepreneur, there's a money man, right? When you look at society or you look at the successful people, they always have people behind them. There's always a team of people,
Right.
right? No matter what industry you're in, right? Whether you're entertainment, you're business, professional, athletics. There's always people behind them. Like, you cannot succeed and exist in this world, in my opinion, without having strong people behind you. You know, they say, look to the people on your right, look to the people on your left. The people you surround yourself with will either elevate you or bring you down, right? If you hang with turkeys, you can't soar with eagles, right? It's countless examples that people share that tell you, you know, what you consume daily will either elevate you or bring you down. And part of that consumption is who you surround yourself with, right? If you're not bringing in information, you're not learning from individuals, you're not networking and connecting with other people in spaces you want to occupy, if you're not just creating relationships, you're not going to get to the level of success that you acquire or that you're looking for, right? So, and that's in real estate investing, right? And it doesn't have to be like, I'm going to give you everything for this. It's like there's people that want to work with you. They're on the outside of your comfort zone, right? On the opposite side of fear is where your success is at. You just got to get there, right?
So. Yeah. No. And like you said, I mean, as far as partnering with people, especially on the new construction side, I mean, if your desire is to kind of do it on your own, you don't have to partner with people forever unless you find a partner that you all, you know, kind of hit it off with and you all want to establish a company, but you don't have to partner with people forever. You know, what I've heard from a lot of people in the industry is once you kind of get, you know, three to four new construction projects under your belt, under partnerships, then now you got some experience behind your belt. You know, you have some viability behind you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you know, sometimes it could be a partner convenience. It's like we all have skills and traits that are unique to us, mm-hmm. right? It's things that you might excel at that some people find challenging. And if you can connect with those people with a shared vision, then you guys can both go to the same place and just leverage each other's experience to both you guys' benefits, right? Like I might be good at marketing or talking to people, where the other investors like, you know what? I don't want to talk to nobody. I just want to give the money away, right? So, hey, look, you get the money, I take it, and we do this. We come up with a reasonable split, and it's as simple as that, right? But once you get the experience, you have your good quality deal, all the pieces tend to fall in line, right? But it's getting to that point, understanding what's a good deal, you know, trying to get to the experience. And yeah, I mean, that's a challenge, I think.
Gotcha. Well, Mike, man, I definitely appreciate you coming on. I am not going to keep you. Again, it is the day before Thanksgiving, so I know, you know, you gotta get ready for tomorrow. You gotta get your appetite ready for all the turkey and dressing and everything that's gonna happen. But man, if people want to connect with you, what is the best way for people to reach out to you so you can become their money man?
Yeah, so you can. I'm old school, right? I'm trying to get connected with social media. So you can find me on social media platforms, but the best way to reach out to me is phone or email, right? So I don't have a problem sharing my numbers, but that's the best way to get a hold of me: phone, email, text. I'm old school. I like to connect with people. I like to talk to people. So if you see me at an event, come say hi. I'll say hi right back to you. But that's the best way to get a hold of me, right? And then my email, I can give it to you right now if you like.
Man, give us all the info you're comfortable with giving. So give it all.
Yeah. So you can email me Mike@YourMoneyMan, right? And that's man with two N's, just like my name, Michael Mann, Mike@YourMoneyMan.com, Mike@YourMoneyMan, right? Because I would like to be your money man. It's so many things you got to think about in real estate. At least let me take the finance off the table for you, right? Leverage me so you can focus on finding good quality deals.
Gotcha. Well, Mike, it has been a pleasure. Truly, again, want to thank you for your time, man. It was much appreciated.
Yeah, no problem. We got to do this again. I feel like I've been in real estate, and every time I get on like a podcast or I go to an event, seminar, and I speak, I feel like I can just talk and talk and talk forever, right? and like I'm all for education, and so I'm never going to knock education, but I've been through a lot of different education. And one thing I've learned that some of these platforms and places they don't give you is just being able to talk to people. Like, man, I was knocking on the lady's door and she slammed door in my face. So I was dealing with this realtor. I didn't get anywhere. And it's like having a connection, be able to kind of bounce ideas off people, I think is really, really valuable, right? Just even if you just have, for example, I have a question about financing. Like how do I get this financed? It's like, even if you don't go with me, I don't have a problem taking 5-10 minutes out of my day just to kind of break it down for you a little bit, or at least present the information in a way that I only know how to present it maybe it helps you more so than speaking with a different banker, right? Because if we can all do good quality deals, that makes everybody's life easier, right? When people do bad deals, lenders get mad. They don't put the money out there. Then we can't find deals because there's no money. But if we're doing good quality deals, everybody gets to eat. That's just my opinion. But yeah, I think it's value. So if you want to bring me back on, I have no problem with coming on, talking, and maybe we book some seminars and get some people out, and we go do some deals. Do some drive-bys and just talk. So
Man, for
I
sure.
always enjoy doing that. I always enjoy doing that.
We're definitely gonna make it happen for sure. And I know we just scratched the surface. We didn't even touch on the refinances that you're doing for the investors. So we're definitely gonna have you back on for sure, man.
Yeah.
Definitely
So
gonna have you
yeah,
back on.
everyone talk about how bad interest rates are, but man, I'll put it in this perspective. The cheapest money is real estate money. You cannot borrow money from a bank lower than a rate that you'll get on a real estate loan, right? Regardless of the interest rate. So if you're complaining about a 9 to 10% interest rate, if you want to get a business loan, the rate will be higher, right? Because it's the cheapest loan that you can get out there. So, and I think that's my timer letting me know that it's about time.
It's all
But
good,
yeah,
man.
just kind of put that in perspective. So when you look at it that way, you can, it's refinancing is not that hard of a thing, right? So.
Man, appreciate it again. To my listeners, this is another episode of the Wealth and Real Estate Development Podcast. I definitely want to thank you again for listening to this episode. Mike definitely dropped a lot of gems. Hope you all learned a ton. And I will see you on the next episode. Let's get wired up. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please share this content with someone else who would benefit from it. I'm looking forward to having you with me on the next episode. Now go out and create some wealth in real estate development.